ding 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 There he sits inside your local coffee shop, sporting a mane bun and facial hair. Somehow he believes, although he has no job, that by his 30s he will be a millionaire. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A. Selfies on her Instagram with a quote that's inspirational. Hopes to change the world while wearing yoga pants, armed with her dreams and knowledge of essential oils. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A. Criticism isn't easy for their ears. They feel like they know most everything. See, they grew up with undeserved confidence, 'cause they got trophies just for participating. M-I-L-L-E-N. What do you think, millennials listening, or boomers, which is my generation? Boomer versus millennial is my topic on tonight's Sharon Hour, just starting. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 935. I'm a boomer, a post-war baby. So my adult life was formed and informed by a post-war sensibility that was joyous. We'd just come out of World War II. Austerity and horrors, but we were children, so we hadn't experienced that part of it. We just grew up with parents that had emerged from it, but had our own autonomous experience that didn't involve the hardships that they had to endure during the war. But it was a time when a lot of barriers were being broken down. The class barrier, to some extent, in London anyway, in swinging London, the upper class mingled with the working class. Really, the only requirement was that you had an exuberant personality or were beautiful or had success and money and you could transcend your class, which really before you couldn't, even if you had all those things. Northern England was an industrial part of England and predominantly working class. But the Beatles hit London and suddenly Liverpool was kind of cool. We had Cockney photographers like Terry Donovan and David Bailey dating leggy models from the counties. And we were wanton. We were free. We indulged in everything. There was nakedness. There was sex. There were drugs. There was the musical hair. There was just letting it all hang out, having new experiences, living life with abandon. The pill was introduced, so all of a sudden women weren't worried that they would get pregnant if they had sex. The women's movement sort of took off from there, with women realizing they could take some of the power for themselves. They didn't have to be subservient to men. They didn't have to dress for men. They took their bras off and burned them. They demanded equality. They said, we can do everything a man can do, just as well. We don't have to be confined to the kitchen and child rearing and baby production. We can have careers. We can go to the same Ivy League universities. We can become professionals in every field we want. We boomers really did revolutionize society. Men dressed like women in flowing clothes and grew their hair long. Women dressed however they wanted. In swinging London, we wore tiny mini skirts, not just above the knee, but literally just below the panty line. or long skirts. I remember I was in the paper once. They did an article in the Daily Mail or the Daily Express, I can't remember which. They kind of grabbed people off the street and asked them whether they were wearing mini or maxi skirts. And I was quoted as saying it was too much of a decision, so I felt safer wearing trousers. So we were a very free generation and affected a lot of social change. And millennials really, by default, to some extent, change society. Well, that's a bit unfair. Actually, millennials created a new society because when the internet came along, the young nerds rose to the challenge and grabbed that part of the market. Unfortunately, it was again mainly the males that did that. But by the time millennials came along, we boomers had set the stage for women so that they weren't confined to be Susie Homemaker like the generation before the boomers and would never be confined to that again. There's still a ways to go to have full equality and full equal pay, but considering what the boomers achieved for the generations that preceded them, it was really a pretty huge contribution. So what have the millennials done with it? What have they contributed? I'm going to present the bad rap they get, and I'm going to present the good one, and I'm going to talk to a millennial who holds down the job of music director at our KX935 radio station. She's one of the loveliest people, whether millennial or not, that I know. She has the nicest constitution, always seemingly cheerful and equanimous, and she's smart and nice. And if there's another side to her, it hasn't revealed itself to me. But I want to hear what she thinks about her generation, because even for myself, it was hard to be objective. You know, when you're growing up in the midst of a generation, you don't really stand back and think about it. It's just what you know, especially at a less ruminative age when you're just living and trying to make your way and not sitting in your armchair philosophizing. So my topic on tonight's KX935's Share an Hour, just to reiterate, is boomer versus millennial. And my millennial is the lovely Steph Weaver-Weinberg. And here's what she has to tell me.
I've struggled with that label, millennial, because I think how millennials are portrayed in the media these days, it's like millennials with their selfie sticks, millennials with their social media obsession, and this all on their phone all the time, and just seeming like there's a new think piece every week.
You struggle because do you think it's unfair and untrue, or because you think there's any legitimacy to it?
I think it paints far too broad a stroke.
As do any categorizations,
exactly.
Really, and pigeonholing. But do you think it has any legitimacy?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a certain truth to that.
How old are you?
I'm 23. I was born in 1994.
23.
But most of the millennials are going to have grown up with digital media in whatever form from the beginning. I mean, I remember making an AOL account, like an email account, when I was 4 and a half. Like, you know, like ridiculous.
But it's funny that it seems ridiculous even to you.
Yeah, it does.
And you knew nothing different.
Right.
Is it just it seems ridiculous because your parents will say it's ridiculous? Or did it seem ridiculous even to you at 4?
It seems ridiculous, I guess, in hindsight, now that I've started to reflect more on how I grew up, on the difference between, you know, hearing my dad, he grew up in South Africa, and he tells all these amazing stories of, oh, when I was 7, my friends and I used to go out and catch pigeons, and we raced the pigeons in the backyard, and that was our entertainment. And it's like, wow, you know. I mean, it seems cliche to say, oh, well, if I hadn't had TV, I would have had a much different growing up experience. But it's true. Like, I have 2 brothers, and we all 3 of us kind of gravitated towards video games and TV. So in that way, I definitely identify with that.
But we had TV.
Yeah.
But in fact, I think I was about 9 or 10 when we got TV. So it wasn't that we didn't have TV,
right. But
it would have been, well, certainly in my family, hugely frowned on if we'd spent daytime sitting watching there. We'd watch as a family maybe at night,
Community.
Liberace on Sunday afternoon or the Queen's speech or something like that.
Yeah. But
certainly wasn't the center of our world.
Right.
As a child growing up,
mm-hmm.
it's the center of my world now. But
right.
How old is your dad?
He was born in 57, so he's okay. Just about to turn 60. Yeah, growing up in South Africa, I guess they had different access to certain things, like he just didn't have a TV in the house, and we had a TV in every room in the house when I grew up. Or it was almost like you could isolate yourself and just lock yourself in a room and still feel connected to whatever it might be that you're entertaining yourself with. And the connection issue, that's the biggest criticism I think I hear of my generation, that we are not as social, we're not as connected on a personal level, even though we are on social media and we think we are. And that's something that I've definitely reflected on, especially in the last 3 or 4 years.
A quick reminder that you're tuned to The Sharon Hour on Laguna's KX935. I'm Sharon James, talking tonight to KX935's music director, Steph Weaver-Weinberg, because she's a millennial, and that's my topic tonight. Boomer, that's me, versus millennial. Steph is saying one of the criticisms of millennials is that they grew up relating to their digital devices and weren't out in the world playing in parks and fields and interrelating face-to-face. That's just one of the many criticisms levied at them, and not just by their elders. I'm going to play you a clip that was featured on a Fox TV station. It's a millennial journalist. Her name happens to be Bloomer, but she's millennial, not Boomer. And she's dissing her own generation quite eloquently. And here's an interesting factoid. And I say factoid because it's an internet-related fact. And for us boomers, we only trust noted journalists in noted newspapers to curate facts and make sure they can be substantiated. This was an internet-related fact that declared that this young journalist's dissing of millennials got over 40 million views on YouTube, and according to the millennial, at least 90% of the YouTube viewers agreed with what she was saying about millennials, which was not at all flattering. So without further ado, here on this KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, I'm going to play you an edited portion of that very YouTube video. And you can see if you are one of my, what should I say, 100 million listeners who agree with it. And that number, by the way, if you don't know that I was joking, was a definite factoid. Here goes. The name of this millennial journalist is Alexis Bloomer.
I pretty much realized that we're just existing. We're not really contributing anything to society. Our generation doesn't have the basic manners. We don't respect our elders. We're lazy. We're really entitled. And we want to make a lot of money and have free education, but we're not really willing to put in the work. We're more divided as a country than ever before. And I think our generation actually has a lot to do with that. Everything that used to be frowned upon is now celebrated.
There you have it from the video journalist Alexis Bloomer. She is a millennial. She is a journalist. That was on YouTube and it's been seen 41 million times. Was there a specific incident that prompted that rant where you condemn your entire own generation?
There actually was. I was at the post office and two boys ran past an elderly man, and it kind of rubbed me wrong because no one held the door for him and no one checked to see if he's okay. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something about this, and I can either call everyone to action or just sit back and not do anything about it. So I made a video and it went viral, and I never anticipated that. I wrote blogs too about things that are important to me, like kindness and just being a good person and giving back, but none of them ever resonated this well as this video.
It seems like it was a long list. Are you so thoroughly condemning your entire generation? Is there nothing good about millennials?
There is. A lot of people I know, a lot of millennials are strong people, and they are contributing to society and this generation as a whole. But there's a lot of people, too, that just aren't doing much about it, and they're not giving us a very good reputation. So it was more of a call to action to the people that weren't doing anything and less of condemning people that were doing things.
Okay. Are you taking your cue from what's going on college campuses, the extremely sensitive people, their special space that they need? Are you getting your cue from this craziness on campus?
Well, I just graduated from college, and when I was in college, a lot of people were very offended easily and stuff like that. And so I didn't think that, honestly, any college kids would see it. And I thought maybe if one saw it, hopefully it'd make them come to action and want to do something about it and prove me wrong. But there is a lot of things that are going on college campuses. And I think nowadays we're trying to riot more than we are trying to just, you know, prove a point and be good people. So I tried to do it in a way that would maybe hopefully spark interest in them.
If 41 million people saw that video, what's the response? A lot of people must have come back at you, surely.
Well, actually, 90% of it, I would say, has been positive. For every 1,000 comments I've got, maybe one bad one has came up. And to me, that's not even as important as the positives that are coming from this. I've had soldiers and people in uniform and our officers come forward and say, you know what, thank you for saying this. People don't realize all the stuff we've been going through, especially with youth. So with me stepping up and doing that, at least I'm standing up for them.
So I'm going to ask a financial question. Hope you don't mind. If you get 41 million views, can you make money out of that?
Well, I didn't post it on YouTube originally because I wasn't doing it to make money. So I didn't do it for the attention. I didn't do it for money or anything like that.
Okay. See, we have no problem with that. Don't think that I'm trying to condemn you and your generation, you know, for making money.
Fine.
I hope you go out and maximize your profit. I hope you make $1 million. I really do. I don't want you to pay a 50% tax rate. I want you to make $1 million and keep it all. And I like your generation, okay? You should see the millennials that we have working on this program. Solid, wonderful kids. Work hard.
Well, I put it to my guest on tonight's KX935 Sharonar, Steph Weaver-Weinberg, a very hardworking and extremely helpful millennial who works at our radio station as music director, whether she thought that it was legitimate to say that this kind of self-involved behavior was a unique characteristic of millennials.
That you are disrespectful of your elders and that you don't hew to authority, that maybe you're sort of arrogant and self-centered. But that can be, I think, any generation, really.
Right.
And I think it's always the complaint of the older generation. Mm. So, I mean, the only thing I can point to is I have a friend down the street who's a school teacher. She told me that she was on her break. Actually, it was the end of the day. It was 4:00 past 4. She was cleaning up her desk and just sort of tidying up the classroom before she went home. So it was after class hours, and she had a jar of lollipops, or whatever you call them, popsicles, on her desk, and a kid came in and asked for one, and she said, no. She said, you know, it's going home time. You're not supposed to be here. He complained to his parents. The parents complained to her headmaster, and she got ticked off.
No.
Yes. Now, that would never, ever have happened in any shape or form in my day. So I think that's sort of representative also of the fact that with this new generation, parents overindulged them and taught them that they didn't have to say yes to anyone. They didn't have to subscribe to any authority figure.
Not even them. Should be the most, traditionally, the biggest authorities.
Right. So that sort of bred a breed of brats, basically.
Yeah.
Do you think that's legit?
I think I know a lot of people in my age group who are like that. And I think that's why I struggle with identifying with people my own age, because a lot of them just simply have been raised with less boundaries, with more of a freedom of...
Everything you do is wonderful and right.
Yeah, definitely. I was certainly spoiled rotten growing up and continue to be lucky to have very supportive parents. But I'd say that because of that, I have a thinner skin. And I think that's true of a lot of people my age, that when push comes to shove, our instinct is going to be, even though we won't necessarily listen to our parents 100% of the time, we will go running to them when...
The world doesn't treat you the way your parents did.
Exactly. When the going gets tough.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's always the trouble when you tell your kids that everything they do is brilliant and wonderful. And then they go out into the real world and people judge them in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't indulge them, and they're judged for who they really are and how well they perform. So that's always the danger. I mean, the flip side is that it usually breeds confidence when you are told that you're wonderful. And when you're made to feel that loved, that's rather a wonderful way to grow up. And you can start to build your hardened shell a little bit once you're an adult and have some perspective. So that's the other side of the equation.
It's a very fine line to walk.
It's very fine. I mean, for us, I think I had the opposite. You know, my parents were overly critical.
Yeah.
Not my parents, my mother.
Sure.
And I had a very thin skin, so didn't even have the safety valve of being able to run home.
That little nurture.
And share it with her, because actually she would have been more brutal than the world out there.
Right.
Not meaning to be necessarily, just because she was not going to indulge me. She would be damned if she would indulge me, sort of thing.
Yeah.
That was her attitude. And at the same time, that attitude was perpetuated throughout school as well. We would never really
question
authority. We would never, you know, buck authority without knowing that there would be some repercussions. Mm-hmm. I was always treated as a bit of a rebel at school. I think people recognized the rebel in me long before I did. I was actually so good, I think. But they saw something in me. They would, like,
look in her eye, that Sharon
something,
James.
Something. And it's so funny because I was terrified of upsetting anyone or being told off. I still, to this day, hate to be told off.
A lot of my anxiety is about, oh, don't step over the line. Stay within the rules.
Why do you think you have that if you had such a nurturing upbringing?
It's interesting, isn't it? A little bit. I think, like we were saying before, how it can go one of two ways. When you're overly protected and nurtured and spoiled with that caring upbringing, you can be confident. Or when you go out into the world, when you do get beaten down, it seems even harder because you haven't experienced that so much before and you're not used to it. And I think that's what happened to me. I was super confident until basically I reached high school. I went to high school at a very large public high school in the suburbs of Chicago after going to a very small elementary and grade school. So that was an interesting jump from 50 kids in a grade to 1,200 kids in a grade.
1,200?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. New Trier, it's like one of the biggest public schools in Illinois. So all of a sudden, I wasn't one of these 50 kids in my class. I was one out of 1,200. And all of a sudden, you're not this special flower that you've been told that you are. And 14 is the age when I think a lot of us start to realize that it's not just us in the world.
Plus, I think puberty, wherever you are, is the most ghastly period of anybody's life.
Oh, yeah.
As you say, suddenly there are demands on you that have to be stepped up to that really there weren't before. Yeah. If you were good academically, that was really nice, but, you know, wasn't necessarily required. You weren't really on a path to adulthood yet.
Exactly, yeah. And speaking of that, I was thinking another thing that millennials are known to do is to live with their parents longer. I don't know what the statistics are exactly, but a great majority as compared to previous generations, the millennial generation has been living with their parents into their 20s, sometimes into their 30s.
And there may actually be a scientific reason for that that I'm going to explain in a minute. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour on Lagunas KX 935. I'm Sharon James, one of KX935's radio show hosts, talking to Steph Weaver-Weinberg, KX935's music director, about boomers like myself versus millennials like herself. We're currently talking about this syndrome of millennials, staying living at home.
I still live with my parents. Like I said, I'm 23. I'm looking to move out now, but the reason I decided for the last 3 years not to have moved out, number one, because my comfort zone and just not feeling exactly ready to be out on my own 100%. And number two, the financial thing makes sense. As long as my parents would have me and we're getting along, it just seemed like just keep doing it.
Well, here's something that might comfort you. I heard somewhere the British Psychiatric Association, I think it was, have just redefined adolescence to up to 25. They said, you know, if 80 is the new 60, 50 is the new 30, then 30 is the new adolescent. And they've officially defined the generation up to the age of 25 as adolescent.
That's interesting, because that's also the age that now, you know, with all this healthcare talk, that's the age to when you're able to stay on your parents' policy.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it used to be 21 and de facto like 19. Right. We would leave home at 19, get flats. If we didn't go to university, and for my era of women, really universities were still the domain of young men.
Yeah.
You had to be extraordinarily bright or ambitious or want to go into a profession. You know, we went to secretarial school, us girls. It wasn't expected of us to be academics and to go to university. I think maybe, you know, 20% at most. Maybe only 20% of the entire young population went to university. It was not that common. And it was, in England, free at the time. It wasn't a financial thing that stopped us. It was just, unless we wanted to be professionals, we didn't even consider it. And now, of course, everybody goes to university, or everybody aspires to.
Right.
So it's very different. But we really joined the workforce at 19. And some of us that left school early at 16, was a little frowned on if you were sort of upper middle class. It was sort of for working class and hairdressers and people who went to factories that left school after O-levels instead of after A-levels.
Uh-huh.
So we stayed on through A-levels, and then we went off and maybe did a secretarial course and signed into some company as secretaries and then worked our way up the ladder.
Yeah.
And that was very common, and there were ample jobs for secretaries. There were ample jobs at the lower echelons of business. And so there were ample jobs for maybe the working class in factories. But of course none of that exists anymore. You almost are forced into a professional arena because it's no longer the industrial age. There are no jobs.
You have to specialize in...
Right, and you have to have like a PhD to compete in the workforce. So what were you thinking you would be when you grew up in school?
Oh my gosh, that troubled me then more than any other thing on my mind. When I started to think, what do I enjoy? What do I want to... How can I turn this into a career? Because most of how I spent my free time in high school was just listening to music, finding new music. That was what really got me going. So I always had a sort of fantasy that I would soundtrack movies, score movies. I had a family friend who was a composer, and I would always just like look up to him. He's 27. Just last year, he had to go back to school because in that realm, he wasn't getting the respect he needed because he didn't study with so-and-so and so-and-so.
Letters after his name.
Self-taught. So he's at CalArts now and building up his resume. Anyway, I wanted to be involved in that world, but wasn't really sure how to get there, and I lacked ambition. I've always been happy to just lay on the couch and coast. I just don't have that drive in me necessarily. I need to push myself a little bit more, something I've kind of come to find out about myself growing up. But when it came time when I was a junior in high school to start looking at schools, and you get assigned a college counselor and you have to start at least looking at places. Yeah. And at my high school, it was mandatory to have to meet with a college counselor. And it was, I think, 99.2% of the kids at my high school go on to college. It's very, very slim, the number of people who don't, you know.
Tell me again the name of the high school.
New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois. It's an affluent area, so since most of the families can afford it, most of the kids just go to school, and that's just a thing that they do. But I had been struggling with academics my senior year, and I think I was sort of sabotaging myself. I really was scared of college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought, oh, maybe I want to go into music. Maybe I want to go into English. So I was going back and forth, and my mom really wanted me to take a gap year, which has become sort of a really, I think, smart and amazing opportunity for people who don't necessarily know what they want to specialize in. At
smart
college.
Except for us boomers that are paying for that gap year, us parents. Exactly. I mean, it's very clever of the universities, yeah, too. Yeah.
But I knew a couple people from my high school who were going to go on gap year. One of them went to Ghana. One of them just stayed at home and worked, got a job and took a couple community college classes, but basically didn't want to go to do the whole college thing. And I said, you know what? I'm going to just give it a try. I'm just going to try it out. I applied to a school like 20 minutes away from where I grew up called Lake Forest College.
You mean give college a try, not give a gap year a try?
Yes. So I applied to and I got into a school that was within my comfort zone, 20 minutes away from where I grew up. So just a drive away. If I ever needed to run back to mommy and daddy, I could do it. And I did. I ended up going to that school for 3 semesters. And during the 3rd semester, just had a complete crisis of confidence. And, what am I doing? Why am I even here? Where is this leading to? And it's kind of let myself give up, I guess.
Were your parents okay with it?
Yeah, my parents, for better and for worse, have always been 100% there for me and not made me do anything that I felt like I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I think it was the right thing to do because of how things have turned out for me, but I know they must have struggled with whether to push me. You know, that whole dilemma. Parenting, I'm sure, comes up a lot.
Probably every generation is reactive to the last, right? The boomer parent wants to parent differently, and the millennial progeny maybe wants what the boomer had in terms of parenting. Impossible to do the right thing in life, isn't it? Boomers versus millennials is the topic of my share in our tonight. That's on Laguna's one and only KX935. From where I, Sharon James, operate this show, and where my guest in conversation tonight, Steph Weaver Weinberg, is music director. We're talking about her parents' reaction to her wanting to drop out of college, and generally, as boomers, how their attitudes compare to hers.
I think my mom and I have always been very similar in personality and interests. And her parents were, especially her mom, very much the opposite in terms of nurturing. Like, she went the opposite direction with her parenting style, so.
Your grandmother is not accommodating to your mom in the same right. way as your mom chose to be to you.
Yeah.
And what did your mom do?
Her college journey was a little bit bumpy. She attended 3 different schools in the first 3 years, that kind of thing.
Because?
She just also wasn't sure really what she wanted to do. She ended up landing at a music conservatory and studying music and piano performance there.
So music has been in your family?
Yeah.
And was it in hers? Was it in her parents,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, my grandma and my grandma's mom, my great-grandma, both made all their kids pick up an instrument and take lessons when they were young. So my mom did that with us, too.
What was your instrument?
Violin.
Yeah, mine too. But
really?
My parents made me give it up because they couldn't stand the sound of me practicing. And I was such a conscientious little girl. You know, we were supposed to practice 15 minutes minimum every
yeah.
night. And we had to write in a little notebook how many minutes we practiced. And I'd write like 13 and a half.
Or you just got shouted out.
Because they were screaming, stop, stop. And I couldn't make my 15 minutes. And I was too honest to write that I'd done 15 minutes.
You were a good girl, Sharon.
I was a good girl. I don't know why they all thought that I was not going to be. Because honestly, I wouldn't have said boo to a goose. But there was something in there. It didn't come out till I was like middle-aged, really. But they saw it lurking there.
The darkness behind those sweet eyes.
But piano was my dad's, and he just played so beautifully. We'd go to a musical, and he'd come back, and he'd play the entire score by ear on the piano, and he'd boogie everything, so he'd
wow.
like thump, thump on the pedals.
Yeah.
And actually, the day before I got married, we were at the White House Christmas party. Long story, but my husband had been doing a show at the Arena Stage in Washington.
Cool.
And Carter was president. My husband had done the boogie woogie on stage. He had to throw this girl over his head and through his legs. And Carter wanted him to do it at the Christmas party. So we went, and my parents were there for our wedding, and we managed to sneak them into the White House. And there was a point, it was about 10 o'clock at night, my father discovered this beautiful baby grand in the lobby. And by this time, Carter and Rosalind had retired to bed, and Daddy just sat down at the piano and, like, full pedal, like a bomb.
Went for it.
And the Secret Service man had to come up and say, excuse me, sir, but the President and the First Lady are trying to get to sleep upstairs. My mother was mortified.
Reminder here that you're tuned to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My show tonight is Boomer versus Millennial. I'm the Boomer, and the Millennial is our KX935 music director, Steph Weaver-Weinberg. Music is a big part of Steph's family. Her mother went to music conservatory, lived for a while in Brazil, so Brazilian music is her mother's love. Her father grew up in South Africa, and African music is his love. He also managed blues bands as a career. And Steph, having dropped out of college, seems to still have managed to drop into her destiny.
How did you make your way to the radio station? And really something that is just completely up your alley as music director.
Yeah, I am so lucky to have landed in this position, you know, 3 years ago, having dropped out of college and just floating and not knowing. My parents decided years ago, my mom decided, I want to move to California. She had lived in Illinois her whole life, and she raised my brothers and I like 5 miles from where she grew up, so she was done. She was done with it. She had it. And the cold winters, not her thing. So she wanted to move out here, not to Florida. So they looked up and down the coast, Santa Barbara, all up and down. And the first day they came to Laguna Beach, they fell in love, and here we are. But when they decided they wanted to move, it was basically right after I dropped out of school. So it was perfect timing for me to have a sort of what I called a clean slate, what I thought would be a good move, even though I'd be leaving my friends and kind of just my roots. So for the first 3 months we lived here, I'd see KX935, this event or that event around town, and listen to it. I like the music. I'm a big indie rock fan, and I like that they play under-recognized musicians. I thought that was cool. And basically, my mom met Ida May, Cindy O'Brand, at a book club meeting. And they got to talking about me, I guess. And Cindy basically wrote me a little recommendation to Tyler and Monica. And I called up Monica the next day, and we had a meeting, just a little interview. And I said, I'm willing to do anything, because I wasn't doing anything with my time, and I wanted to just be helpful. So I started interning at the station in January of 2015, 2.5 years ago.
So you interned, and then at what point did you get to be music director?
So I started interning in January, and then in June, Tyler sat me down. He said, what are your plans? Do you want to go to school? Because we would like to hire you as like a part-time assistant, basically. And I said, oh, that's so great. Thank you so much. So thankful, obviously. I said, I'm in. I'm committed. I'm going to be here. And then a couple months later, the former music director left, and I was thinking I was just going to kind of fill in and do the job for a couple weeks, but Tyler agreed to let me stay on, so I'm just very fortunate. I feel really lucky to be involved with the station, and every day I look forward to going to work, and I love my coworkers, and it's great.
So for any young millennial listening who's looking for a job, two key things there that are worth paying attention to. Find a contact. Put yourself in the world you want to be in the professional milieu. And to do that, you have to find a contact, because a lot of it is who you know. But then once you're in that world, make yourself useful. That's the second key piece of advice, because anyone you come across in that world will remember that. You don't have to be a doormat, but you have to show willing. That's my little lecture, Boomer to Millennial. It's the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. Let's get back to my conversation with KX935's new millennial music director, Steph Weaver-Weinberg, on the differences between boomers and millennials and the rap millennials get, not a usually very good one, and hear what she has to say about it.
So what are the other things that millennials do other than be on Facebook? And, well, Facebook's probably old hat now, right? I don't know, because I'm not on any of them, as you know. I'm just a Luddite, and a willing Luddite. So what are the other millennial things? To party, to drink, to hook up? I mean, I guess that was boomer for sure,
yeah,
as well.
I guess, like, yeah,
you know?
Right.
Drinks and drugs and sex and loose love
free,
life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, maybe.
Parallels.
There are parallels. Do you think Gen X did the same? I guess
every
young person does that. How do you think the millennials are different from Gen X?
I think the main difference is having devices, being connected, feeling more connected than perhaps we are. Face-to-face contact.
It's all sort of avatar connections in a way.
Right,
all automaton connections, if you can say that.
And, you know, texting is a wonderful thing. You can instantly communicate with somebody over thousands and thousands of miles. Awesome. But the thing about texting, like we all know, you can't type your inflection, really.
Exactly.
You can't communicate on a completely human level,
right.
I think. So,
you can't see eyes, you can't hear tone of voice.
Yeah.
Unless you're a good constructionist.
Right.
The other thing that's odd, because somebody told me now email's defunct, and I don't text, as you know. But I email, and the reason I email is because I learned to touch type.
Oh, yeah.
So on a computer, I touch type. And you can't do that on a little device.
The whole touch one with the thumb.
I can't. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, and you have to always look down at it while
you're
texting.
Exactly.
Unless you do the voice control thing, which is very uncomfortable if you're in public or something. You're just like speaking out your texts into your phone.
And they're always so ridiculous. They never understand.
Right.
I mean, I say call Roger. Did you say call Samuel? No, stupid idiot. I say call Roger. Did you say call David? No!
It's your accent.
Oh, is that right?
I hear you.
Then there's the privacy factor.
Yeah.
Did you grow up just not having any privacy? I mean, your parents could GPS you, or they could know where you were at any given time. They could contact you at any given time. Mm-hmm. See, for us, when we went out, it was an honor system. You know, you're going to go where you said you were going to go, and you're going to be home when you said you were going to be home. And if not, there are some ramifications.
Right.
But while we were out, there was no possible way they could know where we were or what we were doing. Unless we were so closely entwined that we told them everything and everybody was honest with everybody.
There's this app called Find My Friends on the iPhone. Do you know it?
God.
It's called Find My Friends, and it is a GPS tracker, and it shows you actually on a map. It shows a dot of you on a map, and if you're in a car, the dot of you is moving. And I know people who use this with their girlfriends and boyfriends, or I used it in college when I was living in the dorm, because my friends and I, whatever, would be like, which campus are you on? Stupid, but it just... It makes me so uncomfortable.
It does.
Good. It makes me so uncomfortable.
So you're not used to it. It hasn't become endemic to
just
your age and generation.
Mm-hmm.
So you know there is an alternative.
Yes, yes.
And do you miss the idea of that in a time when we could be private and
definitely,
do it?
Definitely. I think there's a sort of magic to that we can personally make the choices to live without this technology and stuff, but
we can't,
society,
though, because other people involve us with it.
Right.
I mean, there are things out there on the internet about my friends and me. I
never
asked anyone to publish how much I paid for my house and where I live. Is it out there? You know, I can't seem to stop it. These celebrities, they publish their addresses and when they sell their houses and when they break up with their boyfriends, and it's like they don't feel any need to protect somebody else's privacy.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder if that whole celebrity, that paparazzi culture, is why
social media and stuff is taken off in the way that it is, like our obsession with lurking and voyeurism and what's this person doing right now?
But I think that always existed, yeah. But there just wasn't a method to find out without being completely creepy, and now it's so normalized.
Right.
But it's interesting to know that you do resent it to some extent.
Yeah. Definitely.
Does everybody or not really?
No, I don't think so. That's why I say I think I'm in the minority of people in my generation who sometimes, most of the time, wish it was a simpler time and a less digital time.
That's key, because I think always any generation wishes it were a simpler time until they realize how many conveniences they'd lose. And certainly people always bring up the fact that, you know, we have all these added conveniences, and the internet has certainly given us a ton of added conveniences. Certainly I couldn't do my show without it.
Information access, it's just...
Yeah, information access is incredible and instant, and that's wonderful. But
yes.
The idea that then kind of greedy marketeers basically stole our lives away as a result, they felt entitled to have 100% access to us.
Yeah, it's like a trade-off that we didn't agree to.
It's a trade-off that we didn't agree to. Again, it's a social contract that we never signed. Much rather be paying for the information I got off the internet and be able to set my own terms and boundaries.
For sure.
And then at least you had some freedom of choice in the matter, which we don't have anymore. That's kind of outrageous. Is it breeding a more honest society, or is it just driving us all crazy? Which do you think? Any idea? I mean, the fact that we do have information about our politicians and the people that basically we're employing available to us. You know, we have this huge social network. Did you have a good experience with that person? Did you have a bad one? And we know so much more.
So there's like transparency,
Exactly, it's transparency.
Privacy.
Well, that's it. That's it. And should we be transparent? I mean, throughout the ages, had covert activities, and it's allowed us to function as as a social network too, to be able to keep some things under wraps.
Right.
Now that we can't, it's like anything goes.
You know, I just don't really know anything else. I have that like longing, I guess, to know what it was like before.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the world is never perfect, and there's always things wrong, and every generation says, oh, it was a simpler time in my time, and it was in some ways simpler, but also more difficult. You know, we used to have our teeth pulled by stringing the doorknob to our tooth and then slamming the door, you know, when it was due to come out. I mean, we don't have to go through that anymore, and certainly sort of in dental surgery, there are some fantastic innovations, and in healthcare, we're all living longer, and we can do things to make us seem younger than we are, although I'm not such a huge endorser of all of that, as you can see. I do believe in just trying to coming to terms with age and where you are in the world. And
not running from it.
Not running from it, exactly. But, you know, it's some huge advancements. And also being able to travel to see people in other countries, to be able to get on a plane, to have your mail arrive 2 days later instead of 6 weeks later by boat, to be able to keep in touch with people in long distances immediately. I mean, that's fantastic.
Be able to see them.
To even see them on a computer, exactly. I mean, all these things introduced us to a bigger world.
Yeah.
Nobody can live in ignorance. Hopefully, it should reduce racism. It should make us more of a global culture. Doesn't seem to have done that somehow.
No.
I don't know why. I mean, this... I just have an apocalyptical view. I think we've been here before, and we've just kind of gone way over the top and exploded a civilization, and I just feel we're kind of right on the precipice now. It just feels wrong. This does not seem the right way to live.
Yeah, I agree.
You do?
I do. I feel intense discomfort with the way of the world right now.
Interesting, isn't it, to hear that from a millennial, a young person just starting out? I'm really sad too. But maybe it's just a case of the pendulum swinging too far in one unproductive direction. And obviously we're just two people, Steph and I, maybe others of a variety of generations, feeling more positive and hopeful. And maybe that's a spirit I should be conveying more here on this Sharon Hour on Lagunas KX 935. That's with me, Sharon James, exploring the difference between boomers and millennials tonight with millennial Steph Weaver-Weinberg, the music director on KX 935. And maybe we're none of us so different after all. We all want the same things at any age, and we all go through the same basic processes to get to a better world.
What about etiquette? Mm. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any social etiquette. I mean, even in boomer days, even if we ignored it and we were acting outrageously, we kind of understood that. If you're entertaining somebody, you know, don't answer the phone to somebody else and spend 10 minutes on the phone to them when you've got people in front of you. You don't, if you're in a store, if you're the cashier, you don't spend 5 minutes on the phone to somebody who's calling you asking for products when you have a lineup of people who have actually made it to the store who are standing in front of you. You certainly don't bring out your own phone when you're sitting at a dinner table. We didn't, of course, have portable phones in Boomerland, so you couldn't do that. Right. And the other thing that we didn't have is, you know, when we were away from home, we didn't even have answering machines. So when you weren't home, nobody could reach you, which was kind of wonderful. I mean, if you decided to stay home for that phone call from that guy that you were waiting for, that was your business.
Yeah.
You did it. It was miserable.
Right.
But if you left home, then nobody could get you. Nobody knew where you were.
Mm-hmm. You had to prearrange, like, oh, let's meet at the movies at 7.
You prearranged, and you stuck to that damn arrangement, because if you didn't, you'd be stood up and that would be the end of the relationship.
Right.
Now, people don't think twice about changing the plan.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'll be 20 minutes before. Late.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's sort of acceptable because you can get hold of that person.
Totally.
So do you even acknowledge that those things exist, or is it just like you would never imagine that there was a different etiquette before?
It's interesting because, for example, when I'm with my family out to dinner, phone is always in my purse, purse is always hung on my chair. I'm not even touching my purse for the meal unless I go to the bathroom, check my text there. When I'm with my friends out to dinner, everybody has their phones out on the table, face up, ringer on. It's just different between millennials, like as peers, I think, because we are... For me, at least, I, being raised with the expectation from my parents that, okay, this is respectful, we're not going to ignore each other while we're sitting
Would they have made that statement?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even though they're not strict parents, that has always been something that's just, like, understood as polite, you know?
So tell me, how do you finish a story? If you have a long story, if you're a good raconteur and you're actually entertaining people with a story, how do you ever finish a story? Do you? Or don't you? Or don't you think about it? Don't you tell each other stories? You know what I mean? I mean, people have good stories. And they start them and they say, guess what happened to me? You know, today I was at the store and this guy came up and, I mean, it's some phenomenal sort of strange thing that happened to them.
Yeah.
And they start in on the story. They give you a little bit of background so you know where they are. And then the phone rings.
Right.
Do you ever get to finish a story? Does anyone tell each other stories? No, they text them.
I guess not as much anymore. Right as the story's happening, you're texting your friends, like, listen, what just happened to me? And then by the time you see them for dinner, there's nothing left to tell them about the day.
So how do you interact? I mean, is it fun to be out at dinner with your friends?
Yeah. I mean, with my friends, I mean, we share similar interests and stuff, so we can talk about those and just random stuff. But I guess it's different in that you're not catching up in the same way that you would if you hadn't been interacting throughout the day through text or whatever it might be, Snapchat.
Do you pick up on the things that you interacted with earlier, or is it always something new when you sit down with them?
Yeah, it's like, fill me in on, well, let's talk a little bit about Snapchat, because that's an interesting and really the biggest, I'd say, social media app after Facebook right now. Do you know what it is?
Nope.
It's just...
terrible.
It's all good. It's just, it's an app that you add friends on, contacts on, and then you can send a picture of whatever you're doing right now. So right now, sitting at your dining room table, I'm going to take a picture of this water bottle and I'm going to send it to my friend Ben. and I'm going to type on it. It's going to be a picture of this water bottle, and I'm going to say, can write right on it, I'm at Sharon's house right now, and send it, and it goes right to him, and he opens it up. But the trick is, it's not permanent. You can set it between, I think it's anywhere between 1 second and 10 seconds that you can have it show up on this person's phone for, and then once it's gone, it's gone.
So you're never experiencing the experience at that moment. You're recording it for right. some future date.
Exactly, so. or recording it just to immediately share it.
Right. Yeah. What do you think that's doing to us?
I think it's making us... It's interesting because on one hand, it allows us to share more about our day visually rather than just explaining it through text. You can send it to any of the friends that you want to.
And it doesn't go to anybody but those friends.
Mm-hmm. So I can say, I just want to send this one to so-and-so and this one to so-and-so else.
Mm.
So it's personal, but also you can send it to a bunch of people at the same time. You could send the same thing to 20 different people. There are some people who I can tell this is not a personal thing. This is, oh, look at me, and look how much fun I'm having at this concert, and I want to tell all my friends about it, and we Snapchat it.
But if you are in an intimate setting, would it ever occur to you to ask the other person whether they're okay with that?
No.
No, that's the thing. I mean, for me, I'm not sure I want my photo out there or my living room out there or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not mutual. Yeah. And as you say, you can tell who's doing it for self-aggrandizement. So it's not necessarily this is a mutual sharing with all parties wanting to share. This is publication of my life.
Exactly.
And at the same time, it's diminishing the experience that you're having at that moment.
Exactly.
I mean, it's insane to me that you go to a concert and people are
experiencing it through their phone.
Or they're just, there's something more exciting on their phone and they paid a fortune to go to this concert. It's like, well, can you not wait till after you finish the concert and then you have the concert experience?
Right.
And then you have the added experience of sharing it
right.
with people who would appreciate that.
Right.
And being a bit more selective about who you share it with. You know, you come back after the concert, you absorb it.
I know. I went to a movie theater, which I hadn't done in a long time, a couple of weeks ago. And when I got there, the trailers hadn't started yet, so everybody's just sitting in their seats. Everybody is looking at their phone. Everybody is looking at their phone. Everybody has their phone out. It's just the thing you do. You're not talking to the person that you went to the theater with, you know, making small talk before that. You're just scrolling through whatever.
Well, you're not in an anticipatory mode for something that is going to be exciting. You're creating something else that's exciting at that moment, too. Mm-hmm. So everything flattens out. It just all becomes almost the same experience because there are no boundaries to any experience. There's no waiting for it to happen, then having it happen, then having the after effects of it. All those things.
Mm-hmm. This sort of story, this the climax and the
A denouement and a climax, and it's like no, it's sort of all the same. Mm-hmm. It's all about the publication experience.
Yeah.
Well, we have reached a denouement of sorts in that we've run out of time on tonight's KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. I have very much enjoyed my conversation with Steph Weaver Weinberg, KX935's music director. As I hope you have, listener, we've been talking about millennials, she's one, versus boomers, I'm one. If you want to hear this show again, if you missed any part of it, you can go to kx935.com/shows/the-sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. Or you can listen on iTunes. And do check out our website anyway. You've got a wonderful concert coming up and other events, and there are other shows than mine to be heard. And please come back and listen to more topics, conversations, points of view on this The Sharon Hour every Sunday night at 6:00.